Bump stocks are banned. Border wall back and forth. Flynn gets sentenced. No, he doesn't. It's Crazy Town Part 1 on this episode of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They are the resistance, but we are the uprising. With Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president! Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
The media resorts to personal attacks without any content other than to incite anger.
Welcome back to The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. This is Scott Cosenza, and I'm joined today by Lisa Donner. Hello, Lisa K. Donner. Excuse me, sometimes I forget the K, Lisa. I apologize. How are you today?
I appreciate you adding the K because there is someone out there with an avatar with my same spelling of my name.
Which is curious that happened in this universe.
Yeah, she is not exactly who I would want people to think.
Oh, that's a bad confusion, not a good one. I see. Okay.
All right. That's why we have the K.
Very good. Very good. Well, we've got a lot to talk about.
Indeed.
If your job is to write about the news and the goings on in Washington, D.C., and policy controversy and political controversy, inventory is high, and it is the busy season.
Yeah.
We're going to get into Flynn, and we're going to get into the border wall. I want to just quickly talk about bump stocks, though. There's not, I think, a lot to talk about right now, except for the notion that the federal government in the person of the executive, that Donald J. Trump himself, can create hundreds of thousands of felons on the stroke of a pen, which is what we have here, in these devices, which are added to guns to create a full auto effect. And it is an effect. It's not an actual machine gun, which is why, for over a decade, you've been able to go down to the Joe's Sporting Goods store, and without any ID or anything, you don't even have to be 18, you just buy it, like a piece of wood that you could bolt onto old Uncle Henry's shotgun, okay? That's what this is. Mm-hmm. And this guy in Las Vegas, who they can't even say what his motivation was or anything about it, right? There's no...
Right, dropped off the radar, a lead balloon. Right.
All of a sudden, because this guy had a couple of bump stocks, and we don't even know if he killed anybody with them. In other words, he had dozens and dozens of guns up there. So I think it's a real abandonment of the principles that Donald Trump said when he came to office, that he was going to be a friend to those who support the Second Amendment. And, you know, here's the perfect hypothetical, I think, to describe to somebody else what the danger is here. You know that military guys are more into guns than people who aren't military guys? Well, let's say you're one of the guys who doesn't get to come home from Syria or wherever, but you're still deployed and you got a storage locker with your guns in it. You're now a felon the day you arrive back on U.S. soil. You're a federal felon, okay, and you can go to prison for a decade, easy. Now, they would say, oh, well, that's not what the law is designed for. Well, guess what? When you design the law to go after the horrible person, what happens is the prosecutor can then decide to go after anybody he wants. And maybe that person is Michael Flynn, and he gets caught up because he wants to sink Donald Trump. And so you have an honorable man who probably didn't do anything nefarious but committed a paperwork violation who has to go to prison because of it. That's what happens when we pass these insane laws. And a law that grants the president of the United States the power to add a piece of paper, a name to a piece of paper, and create felons is anti-constitutional and anti-liberty.
Okay, I agree that this was not a pro-Second Amendment thing to do, but I look at this from a political perspective. I see this as a gimme. I think Trump was always soft on this bump stock thing. I think he was going to, he said he was going to ban it a year ago. I think this is one of those, even the NRA was soft on the bump stock. I'm just saying, I think this is a political gimme. It's a push me, pull you. In a perfect world, we don't ban bump stocks. We don't ban nunchucks. We don't ban 30-06s and, you know, whatever. I'm just saying that I think this was the bump stock thing was a bit of a political football. I expected it as a very, you know, I am very strong Second Amendment.
Try not to be insulted by what I tell, what I say next.
I'm a very strong Second Amendment person. You know that.
Try not to be insulted by what I say next. You sound like somebody telling people to vote for low energy Bush because instead of the radical Trump, okay, to go along, to get along. I think the power of the Trump presidency, Lisa, is that we would have somebody who would say, hey, let's actually, if we're going to do some kind of a gun control proposal, let's do something that actually might really reduce violence, not some kind of basically a burlesque, right? It makes people feel better.
Okay, but like what? What do you suggest?
Oh, I don't. I just suggest that he not violate the Constitution, which is clear that he's done to me now.
All right. But Scott, let me just say, and don't take this as an insult, you tend to be all or nothing at all. And what I'm saying is, in this political climate, I saw the NRA going soft on this. I saw Trump going soft on this. And I just don't think that, I'm sorry, are there that many people with bump stocks?
There are hundreds of thousands of bump stocks out there. So maybe some people own more than one, but presumably most people would only own one or maybe two. Presumably there are hundreds of thousands of Americans for whom this is a thing, and they're going to have to either destroy those bump stocks or turn them into the ATF. By the way, here's a bit of free advice. If you're out there and you have one, just go ahead and destroy it yourself. I don't know that you want, to show up at the ATF office with something that approaches looking like a firearm. So
look,
people are felons.
I'm not pro any, violation.
You're going to have to pay to you're going to have to pay to house some of these people in federal prison, Lisa. So that's what Donald Trump has done in your name, is said that these people should go to federal prison because they had something that the federal government themselves told them was perfectly legal. Here's another sort of log on that fire. There are several companies out there that basically just produced bump stocks after they were ruled a legal product. You know what it's like to build a company from the ground up, don't you? What happens to those people? Tough noogies? There goes your life savings and all your work and the dozens of people that work for this company? They could have said it's a taking. We're taking your bump stocks and here's the money that it's worth. But they didn't do that. No, it's just we're stealing it. And if you don't like it, tough. Or you go to prison. It's so anti-liberty.
Yeah. It's not his finest moment. He's had a troublesome week.
It's gross and disgusting, but we can move on. I really think it's vile.
Okay.
And if it were Obama doing it or another Democrat, I think you'd be more adamant than you are.
Well, I'm not pleased, but I feel like we do have somewhat a pretty strong advocate for the Second Amendment in the Oval Office.
I thought so before this week. Now I'm not so sure. Now's where I come in the defense of Donald Trump, by the way, because as the rest of the world goes crazy, I think he does something that is just fantastically pro-liberty and sort of libertarian. And that's right. And it's Syria. You know, I had a friend in from out of town last week who you met, and we had lunch with another friend who you didn't meet. And that person was the first card-carrying member of the Libertarian Party that I ever met a long time ago in Washington, D.C. He is a stalwart libertarian. And I told him that we were going to go to the Trump Hotel for an event and said, hey, if you want to tag along, I think you should see the place because it's visually striking and it would be a fun event. And he kind of said to me basically that he wasn't going to go to that hotel because it was partially owned by Donald Trump and he didn't want to sort of support him or put a dollar in his pocket. Oh, and of course, boy. I said to him, why? I never heard him exhibit such hostility for other presidents, even though I knew that he didn't agree with their politics.
Oh, he didn't go to the hotel, Obama.
But I think he would have, right? Mm-hmm. So I said to him, why is that? And he basically said to me, he's so anti-libertarian. And I thought and said, well, certainly to an ideal, but compared to other presidents, surely you have to reassess. And so we got into it. And you know what really made him kind of like reassess and stumble on it? How many wars is Donald Trump started. For libertarians are fond of saying that war is the health of the state. War's the emergency of war lets governments borrow as much as they want, spend as much as they want, and take liberty in massive chunks from the people to gain power. And so that's why it's such a powerful tool. And everybody who really cares about liberty needs to be so jealous against going to war because it feeds all those bad things. And for Trump to wholesale pull us out of a war, I just can't express how great I think it is.
I think it's
fabulous.
He's getting, just like you hammered him on bump stocks, he's getting hammered by the likes of Marco Rubio and his kith and kin. going on and on about how horrible this is, and all the Kurds are going to be slaughtered, and it's all going to be our fault, and we need to stay there. And I mean, they are running him up the flagpole, up one side and down the other, about getting the hell out of, you know.
It's the best thing ever. You know, he told the Republican primary debate audience in South Carolina that Bush lied us into war, and got cheers from that audience. And I think that that may be Donald Trump's greatest achievement. If he can reduce, if he can get us out of Afghanistan too, I mean, he definitely deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. And I say that without tongue in cheek at all. I mean it. To reduce our the amount that we send people out to kill other people in the world. And, you know, our track record with involvement in these many wars is not the best. Picking the right sides. It's hard enough just to get the job done of constitutional government here at home without all these foreign forays.
Yeah, no shit. It's just a bad scene. And I think we're right to get out of there. It's time these people did their own shindig. And sayonara, let's go. And the other thing is, I look at people like who we're going to be talking about in a little bit, Brian Colfage. I mean, this is an American patriot that lost three limbs in Iraq. I'm tired of our boys getting in harm's way.
When I see these Facebook videos of some guy coming home from Iraq and like greets his daughter at school by surprise.
Yeah.
I don't think, gee, how sweet it is. I think of how horrible it was that for the 2 years previously, he was in Iraq instead of in Dayton, Ohio.
Okay, but how horrible is it when they're coming home with one limb?
My point is that even if they...
I mean, give me a break.
Also what's going on inside, meaning the PTSD and all the other stuff.
Yeah.
War is... I saw a piece, and I wish I could credit who wrote it. It may have been a tweet. I was on Twitter today in an odd... not usually, but I was reading some Glenn Greenwald, who was pointing out, by the way, how ridiculous it was that the left, the Rachel Maddows and sorts, were in opposition to Trump ending the war.
Right.
These people who are supposed to be the vigorous anti-war crowd... Anything that Trump does, it's like that orange man bad thing.
Right.
He can't do anything right, no matter what.
And then there's the neocons. There's, like I was saying, the Marco Rubios and whatnot.
Yeah, well, I don't think he... I mean, he's not speaking from a position that I think we need to reckon with.
Yeah.
He's just some... But Trump's ending it.
Yeah, but Scott, he got a lot of airtime. I'm just telling you. He was on a lot of places this week hammering it.
I just want to get back to my train of thought. What I was saying before is the point that I had heard somebody else make that I wanted to reference was they were saying that Trump is actually, much like he represents the political decision-making or representation of the forgotten, okay, the middle Americans, the non-coastal elites, well, those are the people who are actually paying with their flesh and blood over in these places.
Exactly.
And so he's actually representing them by ending the wars or de-escalating so that that payment in blood, which is certainly not made by the coastal elites or their kin, is reduced.
All right, but here's the thing about Trump that I think people need to recognize. He is a pragmatist. He is a businessman. He's a pragmatist. He's not an ideologue like Obama. He doesn't have these big lofty ideals. You know, he has principles that he feels that we should follow. But in general, he's about logic and reason and getting the job done. And there's no real reason for us to be in Syria anymore. There just isn't.
Yeah.
pragmatic.
There are all sorts of reasons to go all sorts of places. But... Mm-hmm. If you care about the people who are doing it, if you care about the people who are going to be dead, if you care about the people who are going to have to pay for it, you only go to war if it's a compelling, absolutely a compelling thing. And there's no compelling reason to be in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Nor, it seems to me, can you make an argument there's a compelling reason to be in Afghanistan?
Mm-hmm.
How long have we been in Afghanistan?
Forever.
What are we doing? So the next few years are going to really, you know, we're really going to bear down? What's going to happen?
I'm done with Syria. Sorry.
Guess what? I hope that we're all done with Syria, and I hope that we're done with Afghanistan too. And if any powers arise there that require that are such a threat to our existence that require going back, then we can go back. But in the meantime, we can have Americans here at home and not endangering their own lives or taking others.
Amen.
Amen to that. Okay, you wanted to talk about that veteran in the context of his talk about the border wall. What's his name again?
Airman Brian Colfage, or Colfage, K-O-L-F-A-G-E, basically started a GoFundMe. And within four days, he is now, he's crested $12 million. The fastest, one of the three fastest GoFundMes ever. This is a guy who lost three limbs. He is labeled the most severely injured airman ever to survive.
$13,161,444 as of 5:50 p.m. on Friday, December 21st.
All right, so
to the $1 billion stated goal.
All right, and that's 4 days that he's raised this. And he has, really lit a fire under a lot of people. And he said there's a lot of Democrats that are giving him money. He gets emails and notes from tons of Democrats. Mm-hmm. This is a bipartisan issue. And he's a really impressive individual who, by the way, his coffee company, which gave 10% of its earnings to veterans, was banned. He is banned on Facebook, and they threatened to ban his wife if she had mentioned anything that he did. So here's a guy, an amazing man of patriotism and valor and heroism, and he's banned from Facebook.
Here he is.
Isn't that beautiful?
They're full of crap, and, this is the United States, and we can do anything we want. And if people want to donate to that wall and give their money, they can do it. I mean, what's $80 for 60 million people? The common person can give that kind of money. And, this is not just about Republicans and conservatives. There's an outpouring of Democrats that are messaging me and giving to this wall fund. It's from both sides of the aisle, but you don't hear the liberal media saying that. This is America coming together. They want the wall, and they're putting their money where their mouth is, and they're funding it.
Does he really think that he's going to get $1 billion worth of funding for this wall? Isn't the GoFundMe people going to realize that this is a pro-Trump endeavor and shut it down any moment here?
Oh,
anyway?
I'm sure they're going to try that. But I think, actually, in the interim, people like Brian Colfage and Ann Coulter got Trump's attention. I think it's what caused him to kind of backpedal and change course. I think he sees that this is going to be a real problem if he caves on this. And that's why I believe we are where we are right now, which is headed for a shutdown. And,
do you know what the very latest is? Did you hear the radio when you...
There is going to be a shutdown. And I'll shut the damn thing down. That's what I say.
Well, yeah. The difference between you and I is that I hope that it doesn't reanimate after it's shut down.
Yeah,
100%. If we can go on with it shut down, then there's no reason to have it up and running again. It should only be essential personnel as it is. All right. Well, let's shift gears a little bit.
Well, what is the latest you said?
I was asking you if you were listening to the radio driving around, maybe knew.
The latest I heard was that it was going to be shut down.
That's the presumption, I think. But still, we have to see if what Congress does. Right, McConnell maybe can still act, but in any case, it's a little.
Well, they've got to go for that 60. Let me just say something. I think there is some validity to going nuclear on this and going with the 60, trying to get that through. Because if we don't, or if the conservatives or the Republicans don't, I think the Democrats will. I think
a lot will depend on whether or not it becomes the Schumer shutdown. Or the Trump shutdown.
Yeah,
right?
But there's people like Lamar Alexander saying they are not going to support the nuclear option going from 60 to 51. But I'm telling you, the Democrats are going to do it. Why shouldn't the Republicans?
Why don't we just explain for a minute what that means? Is that means that Mitch McConnell would change the rules of the Senate in order to require only a 51 vote passage of the funding bill?
Well, he doesn't have ability to change the rules all by himself. It has to be.
Right, but the right. Senate leadership, anyway, right. That's what I meant, would change the rules of the Senate. That seems to be, there seems to be a lot of resistance to that. I spoke with Tim Donner earlier in the day about this, and he seemed to suggest that McConnell was not going to go ahead with that idea.
Yeah, and I think it's a mistake. That's why I brought it up. I think it's a mistake. I think he should.
I think we should actually.
I think this is the time, this is the issue, and this is the man.
I think we should actually go back to more control for the minority, looking for the long game. And what I mean by that is, I think that the Republicans should actually go the opposite direction. And what I think they should do, and I realize this is crazy, but they should actually give more power to the minority. And what I mean by that is I would like to see where they actually had to get some buy-in from the other side for these major things, like a Supreme Court justice. And one of the ways I think they could do that is they could say, for instance, now, I know that Schumer, he just doesn't seem like a partner, like an honest broker, you know, so I'm mindful of that. But what you could say is, if you give me a list, like let's work right now on a Supreme Court justice, okay, that you think Trump could actually nominate. Let's get a list together of people who you would give some support to, okay? And then we could actually move that person, you know, through the process for when Ginsburg is gone. Now, I don't see that happening, but I think it's something that we could do. And then he could say, and we'll give you, we'll amend Senate rules then to bring back the veto so that these things need to pass with more than a bare majority. That's something I would like to see. I think the Republic would benefit.
Yes, the Republic certainly would benefit. But what we have now is an irresistible force meeting an immovable object. Basically, the Democrats have said, I'm not going to meet you on this stuff because I don't want Trump to come out a winner. I don't want to pass anything that he wants.
Well, that is where we are, unfortunately.
And I want to obstruct, resist, and impeach.
So much
now,
so that the...
Now, how do you deal with that?
You have the likes of the MSNBC crowd crowing for more wars.
Yeah, so what's he supposed to do? I mean, it's obstruct, resist,
and
impeach.
We have the notion that the deep state, this is a deep state war, right, against Donald Trump. I had a friend who works for the federal government talk to me last week and say, I don't know if Trump is sort of a bad actor. This is, you know, these attackers are the bad actors. And this is a person who is an observer of the news, but not to the extent that perhaps you and I are into it, you know, past our eyeballs. Mm-hmm. But there are smart people out there who are inundated by what you and I often consider fake news, and it's working. You know, that people are seeing. If you put up an ad for Coca-Cola 100 times a day, it's no surprise that people go and buy the Coca-Cola, right? That's okay. Why they do it. If you put up information that Donald Trump is a criminal on a news cycle every 15 seconds, then people think that Donald Trump's a criminal. Even if you don't have substantiating evidence to back it up, that doesn't matter if you say it long enough and loud enough.
I think this dovetails perfectly into the Victor Davis Hanson soundbite that we have from Tucker Carlson this week. He went on a 4.5-minute soliloquy, and for Tucker not to interrupt somebody for 4.5 minutes, you know it's got to be good. He is basically talking about a soft coup. He's basically talking about what you're saying, that they don't want to do anything that's going to make our republic work or function.
Finally, this Mueller investigation is not in isolation. We had, remember, from the day Trump was elected, we were told that the voting machines were fraudulent. We're going to sue. And then there was a group, remember, about the Electoral College? We had to overturn, get to the electors. And then we went to the 25th Amendment that Trump was unbalanced, and then that didn't work. Then we went to the Emoluments Clause. He'd profit, even though his businesses had lost $1 billion. And then we gone to the Mueller. And so there's a slow motion, if you will. I don't want to be too psychodramatic like MSNBC guests, but there is sort of a slow motion coup to overturn the elections when we should just take a deep breath and say we have a chance to adjudicate this in the next 2020 election, and we do not want to destroy two centuries of American constitutional jurisprudence. Because we know historically, Tucker, when you have, whether it's successful systems like ours or the Greek city-state of the 4th century or Rome in the 5th century AD or the Byzantines in the 15th century or the ancient regime in Rome, why do they fall apart? They fall apart because an elite no longer warrants the respect that they think that they deserve, exactly, because they're out of touch with the people. And we have a whole bunch of people on questions of global warming, as we see in Europe, or immigration in Eastern Europe, or here at home, that feel that they can on high dictate to people, and they're never subject to the ramifications of their own ideology and policy. And it's like the emperor has no clothes, and then they're surprised that Trump won, or surprised that people are rioting in Paris. What do they think was going to happen?
He is Victor Davis Hanson, and he lays it out quite well. I think that the important thing to focus on is the marrow of the charge. Donald Trump did X. What is X? Let's go to the marrow, and there's none there. There is no there. It's all vaporware. And to that, I think that the most important clip that I was looking for to sort of demonstrate this is Michael Cohen's interview from ABC. And Michael Cohen, he pled guilty to some tax charges, but he pled guilty to lying to Congress and for this campaign violation that has to do with giving money to Stormy Daniels so that she would not speak about her night of sex with Donald Trump. Now, it only becomes a campaign violation, Lisa, if Donald Trump did it as a campaign expenditure. So this is so interesting, because for all of his talk against Donald Trump now that's come out, Cohen, who, by the way, said he was so loyal, which is so funny when he talks, we know that he surreptitiously recorded his client. It's beyond shocking for an attorney. Let me just say that. But let's listen to Michael Cohen. I want you to focus on how Stephanopoulos is drilling down on this point about it benefiting the campaign, and how Cohen is unwilling to say that that's the reason why. So let's have, which that again is the key to it being criminal activity.
He's saying very clearly that he never directed you to do anything wrong. Is that true?
I don't think there's anybody that believes that. First of all, nothing at the Trump Organization was ever done unless it was run through Mr. Trump. He directed me, as I said in my allocution, and I said as well in the plea, he directed me to make the payments. He directed me to become involved in these matters, including the one with McDougal, which was really between him and David Pecker, and then David Pecker's counsel. I just reviewed the documents, again, in order to protect him. I gave loyalty to someone who truthfully does not deserve loyalty.
He was trying to hide what you were doing, correct?
Correct.
And he knew it was wrong?
Of course.
And he was doing that to help his election?
You have to remember at what point in time that this matter came about, 2 weeks or so before the election, post the Billy Bush comments. So, yes, he was very concerned about how this would affect the election.
To help his campaign.
To help him and the campaign.
Okay, so he doesn't say yes to help the campaign full stop, which Cohen knows that's the game for the criminal. So he adds it in there because he's not capable of saying it was for the sole or main benefit of the campaign. I believe, and I study this more than I care to admit, the Avenatti, Stormy Daniels allegations and lawsuit, that Donald Trump did this not to affect the campaign, but to make his personal life easier, namely so his wife wouldn't read about his dalliance in the newspaper, okay? And, you know, he says, oh, do you know what's wrong? Absolutely. Well, what do you mean? Do you mean morally wrong? Or does he mean illegal, okay? He doesn't say that. He says wrong, which is a totally different thing. And then he says, oh, did he do it to affect the election? And he says, well, look at the timing on it. Well, guess what? Here's something that he doesn't say. Well, what motivated the timing of that purchase of the story? It was Stormy Daniels shopping it at the time of the election, because that's when it was at peak value.
Exactly.
She hadn't shopped it 3 months before he declared for president. Nobody cared who Donald Trump slept with. People just assumed he slept with all these people or not, whatever. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter. Only when it became valuable did she direct her attorney to shop, to shop this story, and that's when Trump bought it, when it was being shopped to him. So how is that element of a criminal intent to affect an election more than a more than an intent to simply affect the publication of a story.
I agree. I mean, I think that Cohen is really one of the worst sorts of human beings. He is vile. He is corrupt. He is. How do you spell rat? C-O-H-E-N.
Well,
I mean, I just find him really very despicable. And he's supposed to be giving advice. He is the lawyer.
Right, yes. Well, lawyers can collude with clients to do criminal things, and they do it all the time, maybe a bit
Isn't that what the consigliere is?
Yeah, that's right. Not usually an actual attorney, though. The Godfather movie not and Tom Hagen notwithstanding. It's funny, you threw me off there. All right. Well, I want to talk about one other thing sort of before we close out, and that's about the Michael Flynn story. Michael Flynn had his sentencing and then didn't have his sentencing this week. Judge Emmett Sullivan.
That's bizarre.
It's so bizarre. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to clear up, because I don't see this reported very often. Because what I see reported is that the judge queried Michael Flynn at the sentencing, like judges are required to do, and say, were you, you know, coerced into this plea, or somehow it was inappropriate? And he said, no. Did you break the law? Yes. Are you guilty? Yes. And that's what's reported. And so the idea that that's sort of done to counter this other story that's in the air, which is that Flynn didn't really maybe do anything wrong, and this is about anti-Trumpism and so on and so forth. Well, the thing that is left out of so much of this reporting is the notion that Flynn is protecting his son, Michael Flynn Jr. Michael Flynn Jr. was his chief of staff. And the idea that I hear around that makes the most sense to me, in light of what we know of the facts, is that Michael Flynn Jr. did something that's also a paperwork crime. And what I mean by that is, there's some issue about when his father terminated his representation. His father represented Turkey. He was a lobbyist for Turkey. This charge is all about whether or not when he himself reported the termination of that relationship. That's all it is. And he likely made a mistake when he did so. There's no indication that he did so for a reason to benefit himself financially or to put the United States at some disadvantage relative to our allies or our enemies. And so that story can't be reported that, oh, even Michael Flynn says this is a crime, unless you say, oh, and also he may be saying so just to keep his own kid out of the hoosegow.
Okay, Scott, can I ask a question?
Sure.
And nobody has brought up the kid, and I don't know anything about the kid, and maybe you may be right about the kid. Nobody's writing about the kid. Let me just say this. Is it normal for a U.S. District Court judge to say these kinds of things?
No, it's crazy town.
In a sense,
it's crazy town. And the scuttlebutt I saw on some of the legal blogs that I follow said that his clerks basically made him take a minute and read him the Riot Act and let him know that he was screwing up massively. Now, I don't know. He's not a young man, whether he had a senior moment. It's one of those things where Lisa is making the
universal bend the elbow sign. Well, he seemed off his rocker.
If you're listening, you don't know what he did. He actually accused from the bench Flynn of, he didn't say you are a traitor, but he used the word traitorious and treasonous.
Treasonous.
He alleged that Flynn was a traitor. And Mueller, forget about even proving that he was a traitor. It wasn't even alleged by the prosecution that he did anything remotely treasonous or, again, just a paperwork violation.
What is the bug up this judge's rear end? I don't understand
this,
it.
I think really,
because even Mueller didn't want Flynn to go to the POCO. I mean, what's going on here? He has some animus against this man.
So this, I think, goes back to the point about the bump stocks. I think we can come full circle here as we wrap it up.
Oh, boy.
And a nice Christmas bow. Mm-hmm. If we have a society, so Tim and I have talked a couple times. I say this line, 3 felonies a day. There's a lawyer from Boston who's a famous civil rights attorney called Harvey Silverglate. And he has written a book called 3 Felonies a Day. And he says the average sort of business person who goes about their busy life and goings on commits upwards of three felonies a day without knowing it. These are not, he's not suggesting we're all bad people. What he's suggesting is that the law creates so many traps for people who are not trying to break the law
of
that
course.
It's easy to do so. So then you combine that with a personal prosecutor. If I assigned you a personal prosecutor, Lisa, I could charge you with several felonies, mm-hmm. I'm sure, without waiting mm-hmm. for, I might not be able to do so in a day, mm-hmm. might take a week or a month, but there are so many laws, it's hard to keep track of them and to obey them all. And if everybody is a violator, and what that produces then is anytime somebody gets into power, then you get your personal prosecutor and we're off to the races. And that's not the way the law is designed.
So connecting that with Flynn?
Yes, because it's this paperwork violation of him. He was talking to some FBI agents who he thought were talking about investigating some criminal conduct that wasn't his. So James Comey mm-hmm. said that he sent these FBI agents over on purpose in order to sort of get information out of
him up.
Yes, exactly,
right.
To trip him up. And we know for sure that Comey's a bad actor. Comey is...
Okay, so what your point that you're making in summation is that they're using the law to trip people up rather than to prosecute them for egregious crimes against the nation.
That is what they're doing. And my point is that the solution for that is to have massively fewer laws and fewer behaviors that are illegal and only go back to the common law crimes. Murder, arson, rape, burglary, all
okay,
that kind of
but,
bad stuff.
But we're not going there anytime soon.
Well,
so
we have to start somewhere.
Where? All right. I know
That's
what
it.
You want under your Christmas
tree. There you
tray.
Go. The perfect gift.
As usual, Scott, it was a pleasure to be with you for these few minutes.
And
on
you too.
The Uprising.
And Merry Christmas to everybody listening.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Bye-bye.